The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Following the Super Bowl, many of you are taking a day off to recover. Many of you are taking a day off to recover, probably from being out at TPC Scottsdale. It was quite a weekend. What's fun about having Super Bowl week and TPC Scottsdale week, Waste Management Open week, is we have over, what was the final count? I saw they had 220,000 out at TPC Scottsdale on Saturday. So between, I would guess, around 500,000 people that were right here in our own little backyard for a mega event. And then they had the mega event in Minnesota. We're the only market in the country that has an enormous, enormous sporting social event the same time as Super Bowl week. So it makes for fun here every year. I had done open Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and by the time I got chances to go Friday and Saturday, I could have gone, I was just done. I had to go underwater and disappear just enough. Love it. Don't get me wrong. Seth Joyner is going to be with us here at about 10:20 this morning on today's show, the former great Philadelphia Eagle. He does media back in Philly. He has been following the Eagles. He does stuff on the radio and on the TV side. Of course, former Arizona Cardinal, Phoenix Cardinal back in the day. And all things with Seth Joyner in about 15 minutes. And then we're going to have Louis Moses on, the founder and director of Moses Advertising, because all of us were sitting there last night. The Super Bowl party that I had was at my house. It was pretty low key. The people that I was with had their own thoughts on what was funny and what was not funny when it came to Super Bowl commercials. And I can't help it if people take Tide pouches and eat them as a way to get high. I cannot help that. But Tide wanted to make sure that they did damage control yesterday from every way, shape, and form, in my humble opinion. I was done with them. I'm not going to use Tide. But, you know, there was other stuff, too, around the commercials from yesterday. So I have some fun with Louis Moses. That comes up at 10:45. There was quite a bit of other sports news, though, that happened throughout the week and the weekend. So let's get caught up what is on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by Sagicor Now. Guys, protect what matters most. I tell you this day in and day out, and you still aren't listening. Okay, go to the website. It's not that hard. SagicorNow.com. Life insurance for your family. You're in a different space in life. You're not just that single dude running around anymore. No. No, you have wife, your relationship, you've got kiddos, you've got all this stuff, and yet you have not protected them if something were to happen to you. Log on to Sagicor Now for your free quote. That is Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, we appreciate their support. All right, Seth Joyner here in about 10 minutes. Eric, what was the weekend for you in terms of Super Bowl? Was it, were you at a party? How did you do Super Bowl this weekend?
Sort of like you. I was at a small gathering, less than 10, went over to a friend's house.
Yeah.
And watched one of my friends who is a female and is probably about 4 foot nothing tall.
Yeah.
Devour an entire party size bowl of original Doritos.
Ew.
In about an hour and a half.
Yeah. Oof.
And she said she had been fasting for the last 2 days.
Fasting.
Just waiting to add the quick calorie count on Super Bowl Sunday, like we all do.
The game was it was great.
It was great.
It was good as anything.
Much better than the commercials. I guess that's a conversation for another segment.
I saw what you put on Twitter, though, about how the game yesterday made up for what was not a good season, right?
Sure.
In your opinion. Do you really believe that?
I do. Because what have we seen, Brad, from the last 2 to 3 Super Bowls? Drama, close games.
Right.
Usually relatively well-played games.
Yeah. Very few penalties yesterday.
And I would think, at least for me personally, before the playoffs started, I would think 2017 for the NFL would be one to forget. Because you're talking about declining ratings, national anthem protests, way too many replays. For the most part, I would say a fairly bad product overall.
Mm-hmm.
And then the playoffs started, and you know, even though we had some somewhat nondescript playoff teams like Tennessee, Jacksonville, I thought the playoffs were really good, and I thought the Super Bowl was one of the best I've ever seen.
Okay, so the game itself, yeah, I would agree with you on that. The people that I was with, here's the thing, in our lens as sports guys, we do this every day, our lens is always, much, much tighter on a product than the people around us. That is why I don't like to just surround myself with diehard of diehards, because then you're only appealing to about this many people. All right. So when you put yourself in a place where you have business people, family, friends, single, married, whatever the makeup is, the law of large numbers, I suppose, is the best way to put it. You can get a better feel about the game and how it progressed. There were people that definitely wanted to see Tom Brady lose the game. There were people that definitely were happy to see Rob Gronkowski out in the field. I thought Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels at times sounded like two guys that were tired of having a product that had its flaws during the course of the season. That what is a catch, what is not a catch? I'm not even going to guess on this one, Al. You know, so they were having some fun at the expense of the NFL. There were an awful lot of basketball references I found yesterday. I don't know if you guys noticed that or not. It's things I noticed when they were trying to describe Rob Gronkowski catching the touchdown pass. The basketball terminology is low post, box out, go up for the rebound was being used in a football game. I'm not sure the NFL would love that. When it comes to replay after replay and what is a catch, what is not a catch, we can go back on plays during the course of the game. We're not going to do that here, but every game is going to have that. The flow of the game itself for me was great. It was great. And I'm sitting there, of course, my lens is always about what does it mean locally? What does it mean in the community that I live in? I don't care about Philadelphia. I don't care about Boston. Don't care. I live in Phoenix. I don't have any ties. You can't even, if San Diego saw a football team, because I grew up there, I don't care. I never care, never rooted, not me, not my space. So I'm looking at this thing objectively and saying, how does this impact the Arizona Cardinals? And it impacts the Cardinals. I'll get into this a little bit later, probably in the 10:30 segment, about the quarterbacks that are available or could be available or what direction the Cardinals should go after this Super Bowl is now it's complete here in the offseason. Is the list long, 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 long. Now that Alex Smith is gone, the easy answer is Kirk Cousins. But we'll get into some of the other quarterbacks. We'll do that in about 15 minutes. Some of the other things from the weekend. I was very pleased with the Pro Football Hall of Fame announcement. I'm in that space in life where I'm in my early 50s. So I can do a little bit of History Channel here on the show. Those of you that are in your teens, 20s, 30s, you may not be into the Hall of Fame discussion yet, but you will be. At some point in life, you will be. And if you're a true fan of the game, then you could look at a guy, and Ray Lewis jumps out, Randy Moss jumps out, T.O. jumps out, Brian Urlacher, who's a guy from New Mexico. Brian lives right here in Phoenix, actually in South Gilbert. Urlacher's out here. He's in our own backyard. The guy that I was most pleased about on the Hall of Fame is Bobby Bethard. Bobby Bethard is a front office executive. He also is part of Ryan Leaf's story. He made a big mistake, but he made so many good choices and so many good decisions. And I would just tell you that as a young broadcaster, when I hosted Bobby's show in San Diego, and I would ask questions of him, and then I would see him out at the Charger facility, and he'd say to me, hey, you know, you need to get a little bit tougher with me. You need to get a little tougher with me. Or there were times where here's something about said player that may help you have a little bit more insight and knowledge. So he mentored me a little bit. And it was pretty cool being in my early 20s, 22, 23 years of age, to have somebody who looked at me and said, you can be a little bit more rough on these guys. So he was using me and giving me some background. I'm not afraid to admit that. But he taught me about the game. Nothing wrong with that. I'm sure the players that were cases I was getting on back then, 25, 30 years ago, would not be appreciative of it. But I was very pleased to see Bobby Bethard go in nonetheless. He was terrific. The fact that Nick Foles is a better wide receiver than Tom Brady is probably the overriding topic of conversation today around your water cooler. Wherever you are today, it's, can you believe Foles could catch a ball and Tom Brady could not? So, you know, the stories around this Super Bowl, the final score being 41-33, I'm sure our buddy Jimmy Vaccaro, he put on Twitter last night, he got a ham sandwich out of this deal. I like Jimmy. I love Jimmy. I just think that's a great description. They were bringing in former referees on their shows at Vaccaro's studio, Eric. I don't know if you saw this or not. They had Mike Pereira jumping in on their shows while the Super Bowl was going on, analyzing how bad the calls were. This is great. I love Jimmy, and we'll see him next month at March Madness. Guys, I'm going to go to a place here. I've got about a minute and a half in this segment. I don't like being redundant. However, when it comes to the Phoenix Suns and the weekend that was the Phoenix Suns, so now Marquise Chris gets suspended for a game. And I've said all along, get him out of here. You guys missed it on him. And he gets suspended for getting into it with a trainer. Devin Booker suffers a hip injury. Devin Booker should probably be shut down for the rest of the season, and they should just go lose. If you watch DeAndre Ayton as I have, if you watch Marvin Bagley as I have, as I'm sure you have, you tell me this. You see better players out there. Trey Young's terrific at Oklahoma, but I got to have Bagley or I've got to have Ayton. And this deal now where they blew a 21-point lead in the fourth quarter. They were outscored 20-2 by the Charlotte bench to start the fourth quarter. They're thought so little of, the NBA scheduled the Sun-Charlotte game opposite the start of the Super Bowl. The game didn't tip till 2 o'clock yesterday. Are you kidding me? That's like, get them off the radar. Get them out of here. So more problems there. And there's some college basketball I'll get to later on. I watched U of A late night lose at Washington, a terrific game. And the Brock Purdy recruitment National Letter of Intent Day is on Wednesday. But up next, Seth Joyner joins us before he heads to Philadelphia for all the celebration. The former great Eagle on the other side. I'm Brad Susmat. And now let's turn our attention to the city of Philadelphia. City of Brotherly Love is the champions of the National Football League. And Seth Joyner is with us. Always good to catch up with Seth, the great Cardinal. But Eagle first and foremost, I will admit to that. Dad, NFL alum, three-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion. And now part of Eagle history. You're flying to Philly today to do your media stuff. What did you do last night to celebrate, Seth?
I worked all night till about 1:30, 2 o'clock. We had our post game show after the Super Bowl was about 2.5 hours. So by the time I got out of the stadium and started to move around a little bit, it was -2 degrees and 2 o'clock in the morning. And the last thing on my mind was celebrating. I need to get me some rest. It was a long, long day yesterday, but it was an enjoyable day.
So you're flying to Philly from Minnesota today, right? Going to go back to Philly?
Correct.
So what are you anticipating the city to be like when you get to Philadelphia later today, Seth?
Well, I mean, I know these fans, you know, they're going to revel in this for a long, long time. From what I'm hearing, they probably won't have the parade until Thursday, you know, a whole lot of planning. I'm anticipating it'll probably be the largest parade in the history of professional sports in the city of Philadelphia on Thursday. But you just know it's going to be a buzz. I mean, because, you know, these fans are excited. The ones that are here, I can imagine the ones that are in Philadelphia who couldn't be in Minneapolis that, you know, that are just beside themselves right now. I mean, they were on my social media, the guy I do, you know, also do media with in Philadelphia. I'm sure you know Ray Dittinger.
Sure.
Sports writer in Philadelphia, raised in his 70s. He's been covering this team forever. He was 13 years old when the Eagles won the championship in 1960. And, I mean, I was on the set with him. His son showed up last night. And the guy was in tears, man. I mean, he was just in tears. I mean, this is so huge for the city of Philadelphia because we've got all four major sports. But we are, you know, by far a football city, you know, and for this team to be able to finally close the deal after so many misses, near misses, it's just phenomenal for this city. I'm just ecstatic for these fans and ecstatic for the city. You know, they definitely needed something like this.
You had to have gotten choked up yourself, Seth, right?
You know, a little bit. Yeah. You know, you kind of, you know, it's emotional because, you know, when you play in front of these fans as long as I played in front of them, and for them to, you know, continue to revere you in the manner that they do, you having not played for them since 1993, 94, you know, you understand how special this fan base is. They take a lot of heat. They get a lot of crap, you know, because they're all a little over the top. But you know what? They're our fans here, you know, and they're so passionate about this team. They love this team. They support this team, win, lose, or draw. And, you know, it's been a long time coming. You know, they deserve what they got last night, and I know that they're going to revel in it and enjoy it for a long, long time to come. And, you know, the crazy thing is, the way this team is built, you know, they're going to be positioned to be back in this situation again shortly as well.
Let's get into that. Seth Joyner is with us from Minnesota, from Minneapolis, where the Eagles won the Super Bowl last night. He's headed to Philadelphia later today. It's always good to catch up with Seth, Valley resident, of course, covers the Eagles and is part of the Eagles broadcast on a number of stations and a number of platforms back in Philly. Nick Foles' future in Philadelphia with Carson Wentz is the number one topic here in Phoenix because they need a quarterback out here. Can you even get into that? What happens with Nick Foles now and what happens at quarterback in Philadelphia?
You know, from a speculative standpoint, you know, Nick came into the season. I mean, people don't realize Nick Foles was really, you know, contemplating retirement. Mm-hmm. You know, Doug Peterson talked him into coming out of retirement, coming out of his little hiatus and coming back. Well, you know, he didn't play in any preseason games. He had an elbow issue, you know, that, you know, kind of kept him on the shelf. He really didn't get any playing time, I want to say, until maybe, you know, the 10th or 11th game. You know, we had beaten somebody pretty bad, and he got in and got, you know, the rest of the reps. I think he enjoys being on this football team. I'm not so sure that it's about the money, that it's about, you know, necessarily the playing time. I don't know. I'm just speaking off the cuff. But, you know, I kind of get this feeling. I think they've got him on the contract one more year, if my memory serves me correct. I kind of get the feeling that, you know, he likes what's here. And he likes being in this environment, this situation that suits him and his family well. And, you know, even though this is Carson Wentz's football team, you know, he is the future franchise of this team. You know, no one knows how long it's going to take Carson to get 100% for him to get back, you know, and be, because, you know, there was actually two ligaments, you know, mm-hmm. that were torn. It's, rather than just the ACL, I think he tore the MCL as well. So, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles need this kid. You know, they need him as an insurance policy. And I believe even if he's not under contract this year, that the organization will do what's necessary to try to keep him here because, you know, he's such a big part of, you know, of this football team.
How about the job the front office has done? Because 2 years ago, this team was not good. And the Chip Kelly era had come to an end. And in 2 years' time, they turn around and become Super Bowl champions. From your point of view, was it a certain player or players? You can all, everybody points to a quarterback. They can point to Wentz and say this was the turning point. But man, Seth, there's so many fresh faces on that roster that turned things around and they did well in acquiring guys like Alshon Jeffrey and going out and getting a Ajayi from the Dolphins. It's just been a terrific front office job here.
Well, you know, I wasn't one of those people that were high on the whole Chip Kelly deal, you know, when we first hired him. And then after we fired him, you know, I felt like he had set the organization back 3 to 5 years. Mm. You know, he let Jeremy Maclin go. He let DeSean Jackson go. He let LeSean McCoy go. I mean, foundational guys in your organization that, you know, were big-time players. You know, with Evan Mathis at offensive line, a guard. I mean, there were so many players that he let go, and he decimated the talent level on his football team. Well, upon his firing, you know, Howie Roseman, the general manager, was moved back into a position of GM. He wasn't given the GM title, but everyone knows that he's the GM. And Jeffrey Lurie, his mandate, you know, was he wanted, you know, a head coach with emotional intelligence, emotional quoting. He wanted a Howie Roseman to go out and get a football guy. He plucked Joe Douglas out of the Ravens organization, who had been working on the Ozzie Newsome for quite some time. They revamped the entire scouting department, and they went to work. And I give Howie Roseman a lot of credit because Howie's been magnificent when it comes to how he's managed the cap. His deal making for picks, his ability to get, you know, salaries off the book. I mean, we had some salaries. Like, we had DeMarco Murray, $63 million. We had Vernon Maxwell at, like, $53 million. we had Kiko Alonso on our roster. How do you get those guys? How do you make trades where you remove those types of numbers off your roster? Yet how we did it in the spring of the year that Chip Kelly was let go. Then we started to wheel and deal. You know, we made the trade. We moved up, got Carson Wentz at two. We went into the season. The idea was, hey, you know, we're going to go ahead and go with Bradford and have, you know, Carson sit for his rookie year. They swung a deal to trade Bradford to Minnesota, and then they gave, you know, the reins to Carson last year, which I thought was, you know, is what you should do. I don't think you draft a kid in the top five and sit him for a year. You made a mistake if that's what you think you have to do. When you take this guy in the top five, you're saying that kid is NFL ready right now. He's impactful to your organization right now. So then they just went to work and he started wheeling and dealing. You know, the biggest issue was depth on the offensive line. You know, that year we drafted three offensive linemen. We came into this year. The issue was cornerback. You know, we created so much competition at the cornerback position that, you know, the best of the best kind of rose to the top. And the strength of the defense is built around the defensive line. Although, you know, hey, we played against the greatest quarterback in the history of the league. He made them look, you know, juvenile last night. But at the same time, when they needed to make a play like they've done all year, they made a play.
Before you get out of here, and I'll let you get off to Philadelphia, when the touchdown pass to Nick Foles was run, what were you thinking as that play was unfolding?
Well, you know, when he stepped up and checked, I mean, he did a check that, you know, he hasn't done all year. It's a check that Carson does. He's got this kill where he kind of like, you know, scratches across his chest with both hands. And I'm like, what is he doing? You know, that he doesn't do that. And then he began to walk out over the tackle. And once he got out over the tackle, I'm like, oh, this has got to be some kind of trick play. Well, I mean, when they run it, I mean, they run it to perfection, because one thing in a series of things could have went wrong for that play not to work. But it worked to perfection. You know, Nick was patient enough to let the defense collapse on the ball and then sneak out in the backfield. You know, they blocked it properly. You know, you trust a rookie, you know, to take the wildcat snap and toss it, you know, to a third year tight end to throw a pass. I mean, all the things, all the dynamics of that play had to be executed properly in order for it to work out, and it worked out. I mean, hey, listen, the New England Patriots tried a similar play.
Right.
You know, and it did not work out. People said, well, what's the difference between the two? Well, it's pretty obvious that Nick Foles is a much better, not that much better, but a much better athlete than Tom Brady.
Making that catch, for sure. That's one of the great plays you'll ever see in Super Bowl history. Hey, I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time. Safe travels from Minnesota there at the Super Bowl. Thanks for joining us the morning after to Philly.
All good, man. Anytime.
You got it, Seth. You got it, man. Seth Joyner. Great Eagle. You know, the players, when they get into their mode about the team, when they start going with we and us, I'm good with that. I can't do that. But I'm good where it's former players. Broadcasters don't do that. You may want your guys to do that. I love it when a guy gets so into it like Seth, like that. He's just seeing it. He's killing it. It's good stuff. All right, on the other side, there's all these quarterbacks. Now the Super Bowl's behind us. And the Cardinals are in the market. And you just heard the conversation about how quickly you can turn it around. The Eagles 2 years ago were horrible. 2 years later, here they are winning the Super Bowl. The quarterback for the Cardinals. Let's go through that on the other side and much more. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, coming up in about 10 minutes, about 7 minutes now, Louis Moses is going to be with us, founder, director of Moses Advertising, because I want to do the thing around Super Bowl commercials. I usually just stick to sports outside of doing Bill in the movies, but everybody's into the Super Bowl commercials. So Louis Moses will be with us from Moses Advertising here in the Valley. Let's go through this with the Cardinals now and quarterbacks, because here we are already. Alex Smith has been moved. Even before the Super Bowl happened, a big trade took place, and Alex Smith is not coming to Arizona. But could Kirk Cousins be the guy at the top of the list? If you look at all the quarterbacks that are out there right now, with the Cardinals needing one, there's several names, but I think Kirk Cousins, of all of the ones would be the guy that I'd look at and say, this would be the best fit for the Arizona Cardinals if they could find a way to get Kirk Cousins here. There's lots of ways to go about this. It's not just cut and dry, well, it's going to cost too much and things against the cap. But Kirk Cousins clearly to me is the name that's atop the list from my point of view. I think that there's some other veteran guys, though, that are out there. You look over at Minnesota, and both Sam Bradford and Teddy Bridgewater are guys whose names are out there, names that could be available. Would Sam Bradford be a good stopgap guy? Would Teddy Bridgewater be a good stopgap guy if you bring in a rookie and someone along those lines to have them be on the same roster? You're going to need a veteran backup. It leads me over to the college guys, though. I think regardless of what the Cardinals do, you can't tell me that they should not draft a quarterback in the first or second round. I get it. There's other positions of need. Yeah, they need wide receiving help. There's no question about it. But I've got to look at Sam Darnold. If Sam Darnold is there and the Cardinals have the ability to trade up, which I do believe they have, then I've got to look at Sam Darnold at USC and say, this is the direction that we're going to go. We're going to go with a young player right out of college, and we're going to grow him, and we're going to develop him. Just like Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, just like Deshaun Watson down in Houston. There are places where it works. The idea of you've got to have a veteran backup behind him, to me, just doesn't quite work. Josh Allen at Wyoming is another player, and the only reference I have on watching Josh Allen was watching him get his head kicked in against Oregon earlier this year, so I'm not overly impressed with Josh Allen. His level of competition against Wyoming, with Wyoming rather, much like the Carson Wentz side of it, would be something that you would look at and say, does this make the most sense? I think Josh McCown is a name that you should consider. And if you're going to roll your eyes over Josh McCown, understand this, there's not a better teammate at quarterback in the entire NFL than Josh McCown if you bring in a young quarterback. If you draft Sam Darnold and you have Josh McCown on your roster, I think it's a win. If you have Josh McCown on your roster and just a bunch of guys, I think the fans are going to be like, what are we doing here? So and I just think something to keep an eye on now that the Super Bowl's behind us. All right, quick break here. On the other side, Louis Moses. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We welcome you back. Tomorrow's show will work heavy on the draft, also some baseball around the Diamondbacks and off-season moves that have not been made because of collusion or reported collusion within the market. And then you have Arizona State and USC and UCLA. Of course, our television show is on Fox Sports Arizona. We have 16 airings per week on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, every day, day in and day out. The show airs on AZ Central, as well as on our website, sports360az.com. Later this week, it's a big week for ASU basketball. We'll get into that with UCLA and USC coming to the Valley, and then U of A next week. So we'll have that as well. Now, though, let's turn our attention. We had Seth Joyner on live earlier from the Super Bowl after the Eagles win it. And now we're going to talk on the side of the commercials. Because I always like this. I heard this done the first time with my buddy Pat McMahon back in the day when I was over on KTAR. And he would break down the commercials afterwards. I'm like, that's pretty smart. It's pretty forward thinking. We do the gambling stuff over here. We do all the lines. We do the games. Well, let's have a little bit of fun with this. So we decided, let's get Louis Moses on, and we'll have Louis break it down, founder, director of Moses Advertising, and we can roll in some of the stuff that was from the Super Bowl. The poster child for creativity is how somebody referred to Louis as, and he joins us now for a couple of minutes. Were these commercials any good yesterday, Louis?
Well, hi, Brad. I think, by and large, the second half was better than the first half, and there still were some somber ads, but the comedy tends to win out because, you know, you're in an environment where it's entertainment, you're usually a group of people, and the funnier ads tend to work better, in my opinion, especially for the big brands like Bud and like Doritos and Coke and Pepsi. That's where you really win if you can come up with some humor.
I want chimps, Louis. I want chimps and I want puppies. Chimps and puppies work every time.
They do. I mean, and also celebrities, because the USA Today does an ad meter every year, and the number one spot on their ad meter was Amazon's Alexa spot, and it had about 8 celebrities in it.
But I wasn't big on that. We'll get into that in a minute. Let's go with some The Tide ad series. So Tide has had some PR issues with their tablets. So I get it. You're going to go out on Super Bowl Sunday and go a different way about getting Tide involved. Did you like the campaign that Tide threw together?
I think Tide was the winner of the day, and here's why. They produced four spots, and they ran one in each of the quarters. After the first spot, you sort of were looking for is this a real spot, or is this one that's made up for Tide? And so by the third and fourth quarter, they kind of got in your head, and they were renting space there thinking, is this next ad a Tide ad? Is it going to be interrupted? So I give them all the credit in the world for owning the Super Bowl yesterday with four spots, and all four of them were funny, I think.
And they had nothing at all. We've got one playing right now. They had nothing at all to do with Tide until the very end.
Exactly.
All of them. And it's a different approach. I hadn't seen that before. The group I was with didn't care for the Tide spots. But that's just the group I was with.
Well, and I think about, if you think about big hits in the past in terms of Super Bowl spots, they were the ones that maybe were tied to a big message, you know, and Macintosh in 1984. I mean, some of those things live on, or Mean Joe Green, those kind of spots live on. I didn't see any in this year's Super Bowl, or last year's for that matter, that are going to stick around forever. But then again, we're in a totally different media environment where
right.
you have thousands of messages a minute.
No question about it. Okay, I thought Jeep was very forward-thinking with Jeff Goldblum, tied into the Jurassic Park deal. Let's talk about Jeep. Did they score with you?
I think the Jeff Goldblum spot was really good, but one of my favorites, one of my top three favorites, was the Jeep, the anti-manifesto spot by Jeep. And what it did was, if you remember in the fourth quarter, they just took a Wrangler and they climbed up a hill through water and then up the side of a mountain, it looked like, and basically a product demonstration, which was just incredible. If you like Jeeps and you like four-wheeling, you couldn't help but like that.
All right, on the downside, Diet Coke, we got some of this Diet Coke, my wife did, on Friday. I'm like, this stuff's okay. I didn't think it really resonated when it came to a spot.
I thought it was a weird spot. I put it at the bottom of my list. And really, Diet Coke has been all over the board in the last few years, and I don't know if any of those flavored drinks really have taken off. I think it's a company's way to expand their product base, but that spot with the skinny girl dancing just didn't work for me.
And I would agree with you on that. All right, so on the automotive side, Super Bowl is always big in automotive. There's huge dollars being spent. Kia decided to get Steven Tyler on board. Did this work or not for you?
Well, I mean, those guys, Aerosmith and Steven Tyler specifically, they sold out a long time ago, so it wasn't a shock to see them attached to kind of a low-end car. But it seemed self-indulgent. It seemed like, you know, Steven Tyler had something to do with the concept, and he said, I'd like to be young again. And I don't know what that has to do with the car going backwards 80 miles an hour, but he got his way, and they cast a young guy that looked like him 35 years ago.
Yeah, and we're watching it now, and it was one of those that didn't really sit well with me. Finally, the Amazon spot with Alexa, and this one was all over the map with the people I was sitting with. Some laughed out loud. Some were trying to figure out who was in it. Some felt like there was just too many spaces, too many voices. And you know what? Amazon, Alexa's not that cool. Where did you come down on this one?
I agree that Alexa's not that cool, and you can't force something to be cool. I mean, whether it's, you know, anything in pop culture has to be organic and has to be authentic. It's very rare that you can throw enough money at something to make something cool, and that's exactly what they were trying to do. I think they missed the boat. Apparently, a lot of people liked it, but I think it's more the borrowed interest of the celebrity than it is the actual product. I'm not sure what Amazon was expecting the action to be after you see this spot.
Well, and you talk about celebrity there, Louis, in the spot with Dr. Oz in it, everybody at my Super Bowl party stopped to watch that, and they all knew immediately it was Dr. Oz. This spot for Amazon, for Alexa, it was, who was that? Oh, that's
exactly
the person from. And so it was as though that he didn't really get the bang for their buck out of all the people that they gave the money to appear in this spot.
No, I agree. And you have to see that spot. I bet we'll see it a lot over the next few weeks and maybe months, because a lot of times they debut a spot on the Super Bowl and it'll run for the first quarter. But I agree with you. I think if you're going to go with a celebrity, I mean, even the couple of spots that The Rock was in, you kind of knew it was him. He did his thing. It was, you know, promoting a movie, and you move on. It's not necessarily one you're going to watch over and over again, but it helped the announcement of the movie.
You know, what's interesting to me is the number of movies, not just in the theaters, but on Netflix that were debuting. And the people that were in my Super Bowl group, my kids in their 20s, all were fascinated by, oh, this is coming up on Netflix, or this is going to be on Hulu. Had nothing at all to do really with what was coming into the theater. That was clearly their space, the 18 to 34-year-olds.
I think that if you remember the very first quarter, YouTube ran a spot.
Yes, yes.
And so between Hulu, Netflix, even Bravo had a commercial in there, and then YouTube, I think that what those advertisers are doing is trying to remind you that when you're watching television, it's not all Netflix. There's some other thing, you know, there's mm-hmm. some other delivery mechanisms. And you're right. In my group, both my sons are in their 20s, and they had the same reaction. Like, that's going to be on Hulu, and that's going to be on YouTube. It's really more of where can they find it and avoid advertising, I think, is their motives, you know.
Let me ask you this. It's a far-reaching. I've talked about this here on the show, and I also teach at Cronkite on a digital culture and entrepreneurship space. And that is, I believe, Amazon will eventually be the landing spot for the NFL. When their broadcast contracts expire, Louis, I think that Amazon is the one that makes the most sense because you can shop and watch a game at the same time. And we're starting to see them come into that space. Where do you see the NFL going, and does Amazon make the most sense?
Well, you know, the NFL is the king of branding. I mean, they really do control their branding, probably as good or better than anybody else. And, you know, as they've hit those few bumps in terms of viewership or even ratings and shares, mm-hmm. Looking at how things can be streamed and delivered in a different way, I think that's probably first and foremost on the NFL's mind, because you want to make it available to as many people and then some at a premium as possible. So I agree that if Amazon's going to play in that arena, that they're going to have a big brand like the NFL play along with them.
You can go order your jeans while you're watching the Bengals play the Texans or something. I mean, I just think it makes too much sense.
Right.
I appreciate your time and your insight on this fun stuff. Thanks, Louis.
Okay, Brad. Thank you.
Take care. It's Louis Moses there with us. Good stuff. All right, before we get out of here, we're up against it. I got a couple other things I want to get in. Big week is mentioned, just a little bit about ASU and U of A. Arizona State, the people that believe they're not going to make the tournament, you must think they're really not good at all. They're struggling right now, and they're struggling because, as we continue to point out here, it's live by the three, die by the three. They finally got a little bit of inside play out of Romello White yesterday. I saw a little bit of the game at Super Bowl Sunday. Saw a little bit of the game. They won by 10 at Washington State. That's not an easy place to play. Next three games, home to USC on Thursday, home to UCLA on Saturday, a week from Thursday, home to the U of A. The next three games, they have five of their last seven at home. They're sitting there with 17 wins. You need to get to about 21 or 22. All right, so you win five of your remaining seven in conference. You win a couple games at the tournament. You're going to have a very good seeding. Struggle this in these next three games. Don't win any of these three games. I think the conversation is going to take a different tone about the NIT potentially. And lastly today, Brock Purdy. So the quarterback at Perry High School is being recruited as the top remaining uncommitted quarterback in the nation. National Letter of Intent Day is this Wednesday. Those of you that watch this through the years, you know this is one of our Super Bowl days as a company. Then on Letter of Intent Day, it's who's going where. Let's hear from as many kids. Let's give different spins. Let's give different stories. That's what we do. We have not had a national quarterback recruitment like I've seen in Brock Purdy's case ever. Kyle Allen didn't go through this. Connor Brewer didn't go through this. Brett Hundley didn't go through this. Am I leaving anybody out? Tyler Shuck decommitted, went to Oregon. It was pretty simple. In the last 3 weeks, Brock Purdy has been sitting with Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher. No one has ever done that. So when I get people that say to me, wow, you're sure paying a lot of attention to this kid. If you paid more attention to other kids, you could help them out too. No, that's not how it works. This is an anomaly. So he's supposed to announce on Wednesday morning. He eliminated Alabama. He said, no, I am not going to Alabama. No, I am not going to Central Florida. Eric actually ran into the Central Florida coaches last week out in Queen Creek. It's pretty funny. It's where Purdy lives. So it's down between Texas A&M and Iowa State. We'll talk more about that on tomorrow's show. Our chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen. Appreciate his content day in and day out, his support. Eric, of course, Eric Sorensen, senior executive vice president of nothing or everything, depending on the day and my mood. Jordan Hamm, Haley Stasiak, and a cast of thousands. Appreciate them as well. This show repeats all day, all night. It goes into a podcast form. If you're watching us on AZ Central, thanks for doing so. You can check us out, all of our content, over on sports360az.com. Our television show again tomorrow night, or Wednesday night this week. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. Have a great Monday.